You're listening to the Free Oromia podcast, dedicated to amplifying the voices of freedom. Thanks for tuning in to the Free Oromia podcast. Visit our website at freeoromia.org. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Team Free Oromia, and like our Facebook page at facebook.com/Team Free Oromia. You can also give us a call on the Free Oromia podcast hotline at 430-755-0727 and leave us a voicemail asking us questions or giving us your feedback. Make sure you subscribe and leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hello and welcome, or hopefully welcome back, to the Free Oromia podcast, a podcast dedicated to amplifying the voices of decolonization, freedom, and independence. I'm Jal Ango, and I am joined by your favorite co-host, Jal Maro.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi, Jal Ango.
Good morning. Good morning. Well, morning for you, afternoon for me, but you know, it's all good.
You're always ahead of the game.
Right? even time knows that I'm always ahead of the game. Oh, gosh. Today we are rejoined by one of our favorite guest co-hosts, Jalwako. Hey, Jalwako.
Hello. Thank you for having me. As always, a pleasure.
Jalwako in the house.
In the house. It's always a huge pleasure to have you. I know that and I'm sure our listeners always learn so much every single time you come and join us for an episode. So we are ready for round,
facts.
I believe, three. I think it's round three. I think it's the third episode.
Maybe four?
Is it four?
Maybe. I think it might be three. What's the record so far? Who's been on the most?
Ooh.
I think you're probably in there.
I want that title. I just want to be like.
Jal
Urga.
Yeah.
I don't know. Y'all are probably all up in the. In the finalist list,
we'll have
statistics.
Yeah, exactly.
Statistical analysis behind the scenes.
Yeah, we'll have to like get a leaderboard going on our website.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, and like get people to like vote for their like favorite guest co-host. And then you can like win, return spots on new episodes. Oh, God. So before we get into today's episode, as usual, please follow us on our social media. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter. Our handle is at Team Free Oromia on both platforms. And please do also visit our website, freeoromia.org, and take the Free Oromia survey. So, today's topic is about our favorite entity in the world. I've talked about a lot of favorites today. Favorite co-host, favorite guest co-host, and now our favorite entity generally in this world. And that is, of course, Warana Bilisuma Oromo, aka the Oromo Liberation Army. Now, of course, there's lots that we can talk about in regards to Wabo or Ola. But today we're specifically going to discuss what we've been noticing lately. And that is some interesting developments in Wabo's strategy for communications and public relations that have been taking place over recent months. And so we have our resident expert on all things Kapso, Jalwako, here with us to explore some of these developments with us. So it seems that communications from Weibo have become more streamlined and accessible in recent times. So what are the different ways people are now able to get info about Weibo, Jaluako?
So like the biggest thing that's happened recently regarding Weibo, especially in the way they're able to communicate to people, is the fact that there's an officially recognized international spokesperson called Oda Terbi, who has recently verified his Twitter account and, you know, posts regular updates on what the situation is on the ground. And that's a major breakthrough, especially considering that for a very long time, majority of the last 3 years, the way news about Weibo was reaching most of Oromos was through a collection of various Facebook accounts and pages. And they belonged, well, you would think most of them, you wouldn't be sure how legit those pages were, because some were definitely being operated by certain Weibo fighters, but you never really know who the person who had that those accounts are. They could be a Weibo fighter, or they're just an impersonator with the intention to, you know, spread falsehoods. And aside from that, I've noticed major Oromo media organizations, including Kalo Media and Oromia Media Network, have really picked up their coverage on Weibo operations. So in daily news, you generally do always hear about something that Weibo has done. Being part of Kalo Media, I know that there's now a direct line to Weibo that we use to verify or request information. And I believe that's the same for other media as well. So generally on the communication, the PR front, Weibo has made a lot of positive changes.
Definitely.
That's huge.
It really is. It really is. It's been really encouraging to be able to see these lines of communication opening up and developing, and really giving us much more insight into what's happening with the Weibo's activities. So that's really wonderful. And Oda Terbi on Twitter is a really consistently active account. So if you're not following that account already, get onto Twitter right now and go follow at Oda Terbi.
Oda Terbi Weibo.
Oda Terbi.
ODAATARBIIWBO.
Yeah, exactly. We'll stick it in our show notes as usual. So yeah, go follow that account. There are regular updates there from the front lines, and regular statements as well that are released by Weibo in regards to you know, political developments in the country and things like that. So it's a really great way to stay informed. And also, I've noticed, Jaluako, that there's a brand new podcast, that has emerged as well. It's called
The Oromia Conflict Watch.
Yes, and, that's right.
So basically, whenever Oda Terbi posts the updates, the podcast basically just you know, relays that. Just in podcasts, like through podcast form instead.
Yeah, so if podcasts are more your thing, then and perhaps it is because you're listening to this one right here, so go and subscribe to the Oromia Conflict Updates podcast as well.
And I haven't seen it on Apple Podcasts yet, but it's definitely on Spotify, and there's also a YouTube channel with the same name.
Okay. Fantastic.
Yeah, it's nice too, because the episodes are extremely short. Like, they're just a few minutes long. It's just the pertinent updates. It's timely information. So, you know, if you're interested to hear of these updates as they're, you know, new and most relevant, you should follow it so that you get notifications.
Exactly. Okay, so there's a few new avenues now that people can get more information about Weibo through. And you spoke a little bit earlier, Jaluako, about there being a need to, you know, introduce these modes of communication in order to make sure that the sources are reliable and that the information can be trusted. But what are some of the other reasons that prompted these changes in how and what Webull communicates?
So I think there's many reasons. One thing that's been happening lately is that Facebook has really been cracking down on anybody who not just relays information about Webull, but even says Webull, that just writes WBO or writes OLA. Mm. And just, I've seen people get suspended for doing Webull and then the heart, like green, red heart, green heart, red heart. So there's been a real crackdown from Facebook's end. And I've been in various meetings with Facebook regarding Kalo Media. And without us even mentioning, Webull or anything, they said, they just kind of just brought it up themselves. And they said, yeah, we don't allow official representation or expressing support for or relaying information. But I've seen people get suspended for much less. So I don't think it's a consistent policy on their part. But I think that that's one major thing that's been affecting Webull's ability to communicate with people. And so they've kind of branched out trying to find other ways. But initially, it looks like Webull was more focused on being able to reach the home-based Oromo population rather than an international audience. And, ever since it split from the political party OLF, its only real valid presence in the diaspora or generally outside of Oromia were the fundraising task forces. And so until very recently, there was nobody who could legitimately speak on Webull's behalf in the diaspora. And so I think now they're seeing the real importance in letting the world know that there is a war in Oromia and it should be taken seriously, especially given the almost singular focus by the media and the international community on the war in Tigray. And so even though they used to release statements, but you get very little info on what the war was actually looking like on the ground. So I think now the fact that we're starting to see specific updates on specific engagements they've had with Ethiopian security forces, which, they include the time, the location, what the results of the battle were. I think it's a part of a PR strategy to counter the government's claims that the OLA is non-existent or a spent force, or that the conflict is not a big deal. And also, they're showing the world that they are a capable fighting force that has the capacity to potentially march to Finfinne. And I can understand, with most media coverage focused on the Tigray war right now, that Webull would see the necessity to ensure that the war in Oromia also remain part of the conversation, especially if there's any upcoming negotiations. The war in Oromia also has to be considered.
That's a good segue.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely is. Because the following question I wanted to ask is, what pertinent updates have we received through these channels in regards to recent developments politically and on the front line for Webull?
So aside from the battle updates, which I'll get to later, one thing that Webull has been able to communicate through the Odad Terbi, the spokesperson, has been recent detentions of workers from mining companies operating in Oromia. So initially they arrested three Chinese nationals who are working for, I think, marble mining in around Mendi. And recently they arrested two Afghani nationals, similar industry, similar area. And the reasoning they gave behind that was, if I remember correctly, one thing is they don't recognize the Abiy regime's legitimacy. So when these foreign mining companies come and sign contracts with this government, which is technically illegitimate because, unless you count the recent election, before that, their terms had ended and then they'd used loopholes, not really loopholes, but very shaky justifications from the constitution in order to extend their term. So at the time those contracts were signed, technically the government was illegitimate. Therefore, Webull found it necessary to take action and arrest these workers. And another reason they gave was environmental damage, little compensation for the local communities, And all of that I've actually noticed has given Wobble kind of a lot of support for from these various activists around the world that work for indigenous rights, land rights for indigenous communities. So, I mean, that's a pretty big development, because it also shows that the government's claims of being in control are should not be trusted if Wobble was able to go in and just arrest foreign nationals. But moving on to the battleground update. So typically around this time of the year is the rainy season back home. If you take the last 3 years as an example, you usually see fewer updates on Wobble activity. For people who won't understand why that is, it's for a lot of Oromia, particularly in the areas where Wobble operates, the rain makes logistics extremely difficult. When the rivers overflow, the forests get harder to travel through, and vehicles get stuck in the mud. It's very hard to move resources around, and generally people don't plan big things for the rainy season. But this year it seems very different. It does look like Wobble has actually picked up, like as it has become more active despite the rainy season. And I can, to guess why, I think that they're no longer concentrated in the rural areas, and they've moved into more urban areas with better, with better quality roads, you know, asphalt, probably better access to vehicles, and so on and so forth. So again, that just shows that the government is really, really losing control, and Wobble is making headway. And aside from that, I noticed that the central and western zones are basically bordering each other. And when I say zones, I mean Wobble operates in what they call zones. So they have a western zone, which is you know, in the western part of Oromia. They have the central zone, central part of Oromia, then the southern one, eastern, and so on and so forth. So I've noticed that the central and western zone are basically right next to each other. And, you know, the Wobble western zone used to be focused mainly in West Wolga, closer to the border with South Sudan. But now they seem to be moving freely between East Wolga and Shoa, which shows that, again, the government losing control. They're getting closer to Phin Phin. And, you know, in the southern zone, you can see from the reports that they're able to lay siege on military camps, and the military isn't really able to do much to dislodge them, which to me is either a sign of the federal military being very demoralized or just not having the resources to be able to strike back. So all in all, from these updates, the signs I'm seeing are the government is very much losing control, despite all, you know, its false claims through state media. And also, it does look like Wobble has gone on the offensive, rather than being on the defensive, as it has been for, as it usually is during the rainy season.
Yeah, that's actually such a huge consideration, that they've been able to transition from, you know, more guerrilla-style warfare, moving off the beaten track, and, you know, mostly moving through rural and, you know, foresty areas, to actually moving via, you know, roads and urban infrastructure. That's a huge, huge development, and a huge, huge gain, because, you know, for an entity that has always historically carried out guerrilla style warfare to be moving in open spaces, you know, such as main roads and through towns, etc., that's in complete opposition to you know, the typical style of combat that Wobble carries out. So, you know, that's moving into the method of operation of a full military. So that's actually incredible.
Yeah. Do we have any sense of, you know, because we've heard some reports here and there of, okay, you know, this town in, you know, Wobble has control of this town, here and there. Do we have any sense of how much overall territorial gains, I guess, I don't know if that's the right word, but how many areas within Oromia are perhaps under Wabo's control.
So this is something I've also tried to really understand. But from the sense I get, the way things are operating is they generally leave local administrators alone unless they're known to actively, you know, abuse the local population or, you know, try and force the local population to betray Wobo and tell them where they are, something like that. Usually they leave the local administration mm-hmm. alone. So as long as, mm-hmm. so it's very hard to say which areas Wobo administers because they do leave those governing structures alone so that they're able to keep basic, you know, public services running. But mm-hmm. When it comes to the security forces, it's more, I have to say, where can the security forces move freely? And I would mm-hmm. say that's nowhere. If you go west of Gudar at this point, west of Gudar, there's very few places where the security forces can move freely. In many places, they're
In Oromia security forces, Oromia security like the forces. State security forces, yeah, right. Government mm-hmm. yeah. forces.
Mm-hmm. So they're mostly stuck in their camps. When they try and move out, mm-hmm. they usually get attacked. They're not able to launch regular patrols. I think they've largely given up on patrolling areas. It's mm-hmm. very rare that you hear that, you know, a significant number of them are able to move around. Just recently, they attempted to strike a large concentration of Wobo fighters that were amassing in around Gimbi. And they were defeated. They were most of them retreated because they're very demoralized too. They don't really want to fight. Most of them retreated. Mm-hmm. Their commander was killed. There was one guy who was captured. I don't know if you guys have seen the video where he talks about where they came from, why they came, and all that, and so on and so forth. So when you say like which areas is Wobo administrating directly, it's very hard to give a specific number, but I think
it's not too clear cut.
It's not too clear cut, but I think the more accurate question would be which areas are the security forces able to really operate and move around? And I would say that's very limited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And on the flip side, I guess, you know, in which areas are Wobo soldiers also moving more freely as well? And having these like public gatherings at times.
Public gatherings.
I think that's. Yeah.
Even if you see in the beginning of the year, in January, the southern group, the southern front was able to have tents set up, a stage set up, have speakers.
On Guyawabo,
they had a whole concert.
Oh, man, it was amazing to see. Truly, like because that truly shows you. I mean, that would never ever be allowed to happen if there was any, you know, if the government forces had, you know, control over the area, for lack of a better word. And so I think it just shows you, it was very, I think it was a huge morale boost.
Right.
Yeah.
And you could see, it wasn't just soldiers in attendance too, with civilians. Mm-hmm. You could see grandmas with their kids, like mothers with their kids, grandfathers, all of that stuff. So it does give you the sense that Wobo, there's many areas throughout Oromia where Wobo just operates very freely, is able to organize, able to train troops, is able to consult with civilians, get feedback from them. The reality on the ground is not at all the way the government wants to paint it.
No.
Yeah. I think at this time, compared to, you know, previous years, first of all, things have escalated. You know, Wobo is expanding rapidly and making huge gains like we were talking about, but there's also a lot of external factors in the mix here, I think, compared to previously. Obviously, Abi's forces and also including, you know, Oromia state forces, Oromia special forces are, they're spread thin, to say the least. They're, you know, bringing in new recruits who are not trained and sending them all over the place. Obviously, you know, they're being sent to the north. And so, you know, some people are saying, well, maybe that means that, you know, Abi and these forces are going to be less focused on Oromia because they are so spread thin. Now, on the flip side, you have more external forces that are, you know, in Oromia now compared to previously. So you have the Eritrean troops that are in Oromia, you know, other militias and whatnot. So it's like, I don't know. What do you think of the external factors at this moment?
When you bring up the Eritrean troops, I don't know if they're still in Oromia at this current point. They were. There was lots of reports of, you know, valid reports from from residents, from people within even Oromia Security Bureau saying the same thing, saying that the Eritrean troops were being brought into Gidami, Dambidolo, and then also in the south around Shakiso. I think after the, you know, recently Isaias pulled back his troops even in Tigray, moved them out of Tigray, only taking up some areas on the border. I think generally Isaias does not want to have troops, cannot afford to have troops in Ethiopia anymore as it has before, because he's feeling threatened too with the TDF's, the Tigray Defense Forces, recent gains. So I don't think the Eritreans are there right as of right now, but I have heard of Amara militia moving into Karayu recently, and they have also been operating in East Olugga for quite some time now. I think that only serves to turn the local population against the government and serves to prove what people have been saying for a long time, that the government is much more intent on keeping Oromos down than it is on maintaining Oromia's borders, despite, you know, they train Oromia Special Forces and then they say this is going to protect Oromia. Never again is what happened on the Oromia-Somalia border going to happen again. Never again will what happened on the Oromia-Benishangu border ever going to happen again. And we're seeing that happen much like the same way as it has before. So this is generally just going to be a morale, not a morale boost, but this is going to be a boost of support for Wobo, as Wobo will be the only armed group or only entity that is not only capable of protecting people and then maintaining Oromia's borders, but also, you know, has an expressed interest and dedication into doing that. As for Wobo, I don't think there's it's really going to change their strategy. For them, Amara militia are as much part of the government as Oromian Special Forces.
Yeah. So, well, what would you guys say to people who are seemingly well-meaning, who, you know, generally support UPSO and maybe even say that they support Wobo, but complain that Wobo is not moving fast enough or doing enough or making large enough gains, especially in the context of seeing these really rapid developments in Tigray and the north, you know, and try to compare what's happening in Oromia and say that, you know, not enough is happening. Obviously, I think the gut general response is, well, you know, what are you doing to help Wobo reach the goal, right? But beyond that, what is your response genuinely to that concern, or to that question or complaint, however you want to word it?
I somewhat understand the sentiment. You know, I think any Oromo would like to see Wobo engaging Ethiopian security forces, much like the way we're seeing what we're hearing that TDF is in Tigray. I can understand that desire. It's you know, I think there's a pride element in there, but what people have to understand is that TDF and Wobo are completely different. You know, TDF was a state security apparatus. It's basically what Oromia Special Forces was, but for Tigray, it was that was a state security security forces that were bolstered by federal heavy weaponry from the federal military. The Oromo equivalent would be if the Oromia Special Forces were somehow given armored vehicles and artillery from the federal government. And also,
and actually were, you know, serving the interests of the people of Oromia.
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
And what people also shouldn't forget is the TDF was joined by thousands and thousands of the federal military, including literally its best officers who were Tigrayans, you know, the ones with the most experience, the most well-studied officers have all joined the TDF. And the war in the north is it's conventional warfare. It's two sides face-to-face, you know, firing heavy, heavy weaponry at each other and then engaging. It's very different than what we're seeing in Oromia, which is still, well, I would categorize it as the latter stages of a guerrilla war. So we've gone through the early stage, the building stage, building up the forces, weakening the government. I think we're seeing more direct engagements. So, yeah, so there is progress. And in any case, there's really no such thing as saying what was moving too slowly. You know, they use every opportunity to get ahead and make progress. And nobody has more interest in progressing in this war than Wobo does. For those fighters, it's life or death. So, you know, it's easy for us to say sitting here and then putting those judgments. But we also have to remember their results on the ground is directly correlated to how many recruits they're able to train, how many weapons they're able to procure. It doesn't really make sense to think that Wobo wouldn't be moving faster if it could. And I think we should all remember that 3 years ago, most people had, they had grave doubts that Wobo would even survive until the end of the year. But they did. And they did much more than barely beat that expectation. So my request would be, I would just ask people to curb their expectations, not to succumb to sensationalism, really consider the reality on the ground. And you got to understand this is an armed force built from the ground up using captured weaponry and recruits trained with very little resources. And it's a miracle we're even seeing what we're seeing now. And I think what Wobo needs from people are not demands or orders. It's just support. And support comes in two ways. You know, there's the financial support plus being a voice for their struggle. And by that, I mean, you know, clarifying to the world that Oromos have a right to self-defense, that Wobo has a legitimate mission, and that there is a war going, even that fact, the fact that there is a war going on in Oromia, if you can use your position out, especially in the diaspora, through all, you know, the platform just being out here in the West gives you, to let the world know that, that would be doing your part as well.
Yeah, Jalwok, I think that's a really comprehensive answer to that question, and I completely agree with everything that you've said. I get quite frustrated by these defeatist attitudes that some people have.
Yes, that's a good way to put it. It is defeatist.
Because
it's
I get quite frustrated.
It's your team.
Right.
Like, stand up for your own team. Like, you know, you shouldn't have to ask somebody else to explain this to you, you know? So it is frustrating.
So sometimes I think some of our people are, I don't want to say traumatized, but they don't want to put the emotional investment into something.
They aren't, though.
They don't want to because they don't want to, they don't want to be disappointed. They have that little expectation. There's, I think, a little voice in their head saying it's not going to work. Or it's going to be another failure. You're going to be disappointed again, which I get, but it's also like,
it's like they want to say it before it happens.
Right.
They want to be like, I was already skeptical. I was already skeptical. So. It's like, we're just waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Right. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, that kind of approach, you know, bothers me generally. And I think I've said a few times before in, you know, in relation to different things and, you know, in different contexts, but thinking from a place of fear, speaking from a place of fear, that is only going to be detrimental to us as a people and to our movement. We need to step out of this fear-based thinking. We need to step out of these fear-based attitudes that we have and really think in a more constructive and a more optimistic way, really. And just have some confidence and faith in ourselves. Like, there is every reason for us to have confidence and faith in ourselves, just as you've explained throughout the whole of this episode, Jalwako, that it is quite genuinely a miracle that Wobo finds itself where it is today, and those freedom fighters find themselves where they are today because they have had that faith, and they have had that belief and confidence right. in themselves. So why would we not have that belief and confidence in them when they've been able to materialize these gains out of practically thin air? Like the point that you were making earlier, Jalwako, about people's expectation that Wobo should be functioning and operating and combating the Ethiopian state forces as an actual army, as an actual state military force. That doesn't make any sense. How can that expectation be there? And that comparison to TDF as well. I mean, all of this comes from a state of being ill-informed or, you know, worse yet, disinformed. And not recognizing the different contexts that Wobo and the TDF are operating within. Like, it is not the same.
Right. Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I don't want to sound cliche, but people, they should dare to believe, like, dare to see things the way Wobo fighters back home feel. Because I've had the pleasure of speaking to some, especially through, you know, through Kalo Media. And when you hear their confidence, mm-hmm. when you hear the way they, you know, they're sleeping on, you know, in the forest next to their comrades, holding their gun. Mm-hmm. They wake up, they eat, they have rations, which are these like little biscuit things. And they don't mind. Mm-hmm. They're just so confident. They're like, yeah, we're going to make it.
Yeah,
I think we need to like expand the Anis Waboda campaign, honestly, because it's like, we are Wobo. Like, Wobo is, I mean, we are not Wobo, but you know what I mean? Like, we, Wobo is us. Like, we have to.
It's one form of the same struggle we're in, basically.
Exactly, yeah. It's like, okay, yes, we're not physically sacrificing our lives or giving our lives to Gubso, but, like, Wobo is, it's our hope. Right. It's what. Mm. You know, I don't want to say what we have because it's something that we are so fortunate to have, but it's our hope. And in this situation, I think that like this is a critical time. Okay. And a lot of the people who, you know, complain about Wobo, even if it's from a place of I want Wobo to succeed, but I'm afraid that they're not going to. And so therefore I'm projecting. Mm-hmm. You know, dare I say a lot of these people were not supporting Wobo months before. So it's like, how can you suddenly be like, okay, yes, like we need Wobo now, and then suddenly have all of these expectations, like you all said. You know, it's just, it's unrealistic, but also how can you expect something to exceed your expectations when you don't even have faith in it yourself? And so I think that instead of, you know, thinking of it in the mindset of, you know, what is Wobo doing for us? Like, people need to say, what am I going to do for Wobo? What am I going to do to bring it to the level that I want to see? What is, what, you know, what am, what are we going to contribute? Because it's not some, Wobo is not some random entity out there. It's our people. It's our people giving their lives. Like you said, Wako, sleeping in Bosona and, you know, with minimal resources, just simply surviving on the dream of Bilisuma, of the dream of Walabuma. And, you know, we have to take that ownership and say, as a diaspora, what are we going to do to you know, to be able to see the kind of Wobo and the kind of strong, secure, and free Oromia that we want to see.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Exactly. Me too. It's each of us taking responsibility, being accountable for our contribution, and recognizing with faith and with optimism what Wobo have already achieved and what they will continue to achieve with real and proper support. So if I ever hear anyone say that kind of thing again, I'm just going to be like, what about you though?
Right.
What about you? What are you doing? That's it.
I had literally that what conversation the other day.
And you know, I know if somebody, if you have some, I mean, there's nothing wrong with criticism as long as you're still supporting. And if you have criticism, you know, the word in Oromia, corsa, advice. Yeah, that's okay. You know, you can give your two cents. Try and make sure that it's an informed opinion. And yeah, you're free to express it, but that's not what I'm seeing. I'm just seeing mostly a lot of people who never even cared about World War II very recently suddenly feel like they're in the position to really make demands, not really knowing what the situation on the ground really is. And that's not helpful.
That's key what you just said. It's not. And that's key what you just said, an informed opinion. And I feel like inherently when people are making these types of statements, they are uninformed. And that's the reason why they're saying these things in the first place. So, you know, it's like if they were properly informed, if they really understood the context, really understood the nuances of what situation Wobble is operating in and what the historical context is for Wobble, particularly if they are making comparisons with the TDF, because it's a false equivalence. You can't compare the two. So when they're making those types of comparisons and when they're stating these types of opinions, then they are evidently uninformed. So, you know, go find out what's actually going on. Go understand the actual reality of Wobble circumstances and the combat that they are carrying out, and then come with real and genuine critiques if you have them. Otherwise, just sit in your armchair, because that's where you were sitting anyway. Just remain in your armchair and keep your armchair criticism to yourself.
Yeah, or also like maybe buy your right to critique. Buy your right to
that's an interesting give criticism. Concept.
Like, are you just gonna complain for free? Like, maybe if you did something tangible, then you can say, like, where is my money going? But if you're just sitting there, man, like, you're part of the problem, to be honest. Actually, my answer is going to be to that question of, you know, why isn't Wobble doing X, Y, and Z, or why am I not seeing X, Y, and Z results by yesterday? Then, you know, the answer is because of people like you, to be honest. Well, that's part of the answer, along with all the other wonderful context that Jadwako provided.
Yes, precisely. But it's just really exciting to see these developments in Wobble's communications and their public relations and their activities and, you know, their constant progression in the struggle. Deeply, deeply encouraging and so wonderful to be able to have a direct line of information via all these platforms that you've mentioned throughout this episode, Jadwako. And we'll put all of them in our show notes, so you can go there and, you know, easily click through to each of these resources, so that you can remain properly informed about Wobble, if you weren't already, from now onwards. So actually today we are bringing back one of our Lost in the Archives segments. We haven't done this one for a little while, but it felt very appropriate for this episode that we're doing today, and that is the Sabonuma Award of the Week. And this week, the Sabonuma Award goes to Oda Terbi, the Wobble Communications Twitter account, Oda Terbi, and the at again is Oda Terbi Wobble, which is spelled ODAATARBIIWBO. So yeah, we just want to give a shout out to Oda Terbi for keeping us in the loop, keeping us informed, keeping us knowledgeable about Wobo, about Wobo's activities, about updates from Wobo, about Wobo's position on all manner of developments that are taking place in Oromia and in Ethiopia. And we hope to continue to receive good news from that account all the way up until Oda Terbi is the first account or the first entity or the first person to declare the news of Oromia's Bilisuma. imagine getting that on a Twitter update and just be like, hey guys, Oromia is free, congratulations.
Retweet and then like every time.
Yeah, like a retweet. but yeah, so yeah, shout out to Oda Terbi.
Yes, indeed.
So yeah, on that note, I think we'll conclude for today. So thank you so much, Dalwako, for joining us again and sharing so much information, as you always do. We always walk away from these episodes knowing so much more than we did before we went into it. So thank you very, very much for coming and spreading your knowledge and general awesome vibes and energy.
it's a pleasure as always.
Thanks, Jaluako.
Yes. And thanks, of course, as usual, Janmaro. You're always awesome, but you know that already.
Just trying to live up to your standards, Jaluako.
So just before we go, we always want to hear from you, our listeners, as you know. So please call us and leave us a message to tell us what you think about our conversation today and about anything and everything, really. You know, we like to hear from you in general. So you can get in touch with us on our number 430-755-0727. So like I say, you can call us and leave us a voice message, or you can text the number as well. So we look forward to hearing from you.
Call us.
Yeah, call us.
Bye, guys.
All right. Bye.
Bye. See you in 2 weeks.
Yes, see you in 2 weeks. Nagala chese tanjolu masan nata bachese oromia.